Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlatnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Larry Pendleton. He's a CPA hailing from Virginia, senior partner at the PC Financial Services. Just a couple of words about Larry. He's been a CPA over a decade, tax and investment coach. His mission is to help folks achieve financial freedom by building passive income and prudent tax planning. Let's jump into a little bit more about Larry. You and your family first, and then we'll dive into financial services, CPA work, etc. So tell us a little bit about you.
Awesome. Appreciate you, Mike. Yes, I'm based out of Norfolk, Virginia, Southeast Virginia, for those who are familiar with the area. We decided just to raise our family here, born and raised here. Lovely wife, Whitney, and our two boys, Larry the Third and Wesley.
That's wonderful. And I guess you said you've been there for a long time. So that's awesome. And how did you get into the CPA work and tax planning, financial planning? And you work a lot with real estate investors.
Yep. I actually got into accounting really in high school with a crush on the accounting teacher. It kind of just stuck with me since then. And just saw a value that was needed. People that needed help with accounting and tax services. And as I grown and got into different doors, it was like, yeah, this is definitely a niche I can help people with. And then help with the wealth gap in the country. Well, they've just got to expose other people to the different investment opportunities and educate others as well. That's when we started doing the investment coaching is alongside with the tax coaching as well.
So what is investment coaching is like, and what is tax coaching is like? Just give me some examples of the work that you do.
Right. So we, because in this day and age, people can Google or chat GPT, like any type of like tax opportunity and whatnot there. But the goal is kind of work with the person, similar to a coach. It's like, hey, here's how the tax code works if you're going to be making this type of income or investing in this arena. And here's how to really analyze and underwrite the deal. So it's not just telling you something or just giving you a tax plan to go on your own. It's actually helping with the implementation. A lot of it is a bit of muscle memory or just analyzing these deals, understanding how it's going to impact you and your financial goals, but also how it's going to help potentially save on taxes or how you need to operate from that standpoint. So the whole aspect is to kind of be a guide with you, not just advisors. Like we're going to talk this through together, see what makes sense, and then help kind of guide people in the right direction that so they can make informed decisions that works best for them.
Yeah, I appreciate that explanation. So it sounds to me a little bit more like a tax strategist.
Yes.
A little bit of that. Tax coach and tax strategist is some similarity.
Yep.
Versus the tax compliance CPA. Tax compliance CPA, they just file taxes. They do the compliance work versus planning work a little bit more, strategizing, thinking through the process. And then what about investment coach? It's a dangerous territory because I don't know if you are a licensed investment advisor or a registered investment advisor. If you are not, investment coach versus a registered investment advisor is a big difference because people want decisions made for them. And
right.
Then typically it's a dangerous territory as a coach. What do you coach them? Because they have to make their own decisions, I assume, unless you are a registered investment advisor, then you have to do an advice compliant with the standards.
Yeah, I'm not a licensed financial advisor. Pretty similar to the tax coaching, the tax strategy is like, hey, well, what is your investment goals? Like, what are you trying to do from that standpoint? And let's underwrite these deals, because everyone is just getting, especially people who are high net worth, are just constantly getting stuff emailed to them or messages, hey, can you invest into this deal? All right, it's not for me to say whether or not it works or it sounds good or it points you in whatever direction. It's like, hey, well, let's just look out, see how the numbers work, and really be a second pair of eyes for an individual, help them underwrite the deals. Does it align with what they believe in that investment? Does it provide the equity coverage that they're looking for? Does it give them the returns that they're looking for? So it's really, once again, it's more of a guidance aspect of it. So because I'm not making that decision, I'm not telling you where to put your money into. I have my opinions, but that's just my opinion. But at the end of the day, you have to make an informed decision. And having a team of people that can help with that assessment of those opportunities goes a long way.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Certainly, folks who don't have experience could benefit from general coaching, how to look at the deals, underwrite the deals. But a lot of information and practical decisions should be made outside of just the paper. I don't know. Do you get involved looking at the sponsors in depth, understanding who they are, what they've done? Because in this world, I've seen this, right? You could put anything you want. You can put a lipstick on a pig and make an ugly deal look pretty good with just creative play of the numbers. You could get assumptions to the point that they can never materialize. In addition to that, we've seen the last couple of years a lot of even solid assumptions have fallen apart. So it's a difficult exercise to look at deals today, especially today. I can tell you that it's gotten way harder because the pattern broke. The past reliable methodologies no longer work. Today is super hard. What do you do? There's a lot of uncertainty related to where the interest rates go, what's going to happen with cap rates, what's going to happen with future rents, what's going to happen with insurance premiums. So the world of certainty has been changing to the world of uncertainty, and looking at deals now is triple difficult.
It is beyond just looking at the paper and the numbers, but you do have to look at the operators, and you try to go and do your research on the individual or the group as a whole, see if you can find some testimonials, see what stuff, and it's, whoever is requesting money from anyone should be able to, hey, here's the deal that we work on. Here's the address. Here's how the numbers actually work. Like, we got it for this amount. We put this much into it, and we walked away with this after this amount of time. So it's really kind of knowing what to ask these operators as well, and like, hey, well, these assumptions are great on this property, but like, show me an example. How does this impact in this particular area? Is it the same area, or we're talking about somewhere else? Like, does this model work? And can you, and there's any evidence of this model working in this particular area, especially if they're new to it, because there's many investors that are investing out of state, so they don't have the convenience of having a network in those areas, or be able to just hop on a flight quickly to meet folks there themselves. So yeah, it is going not just off the paper and the numbers, but like assessing the operators as well.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing from you is you're coaching on a little bit of deal due diligence, and it's hard to do. And for sure, there's a wonderful expression, and I don't know what are your thoughts on this, but it certainly is true now. Don't want to call it more than ever before, but it when a pattern broke, this statement is really very applicable. So the statement is incredibly simple. Past results are not indicative of future performance, or past results don't guarantee future results. And what used to work a couple of years ago broke. A lot of deals, if you went and you looked at the past performance or what people used to do, what results they achieved, and then you look last couple of years, it's a very different picture. It's gotten to the point where success, 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 a whole bunch of failures, or possible failures, because the market has been hit by a tidal wave called, higher for longer interest rates and other issues. So I'm just curious, what's been your adjustment, your change? What are you doing different today versus what you were doing a couple of years ago when the pattern was solid? Things were progressing a certain way, and if you follow the pattern, if things stayed that way, it would have worked. But things broke, they changed. So now it's different.
It even goes as far as I've got the Zacks of the Mark Twain quote, and I'm just paraphrasing where the return of capital is more important than the return on the capital. So is there enough coverage in this deal if it's the fan and everyone has to at least be able to get their money back? How much equity are in this deal in this world of uncertainty that we're in? Now, there's always going to be risk involved. And you try to find different ways to mitigate that risk, whether you're going as an LP in different deals or go as a private lender and at least have some more legal recourse to at least get your money back from that perspective. So it's assessing the different options that are out there, the different markets, different ways to invest in real estate. I mean, some people get into multifamily, commercial, single family, mortgage notes, like it all just kind of what fits into what that person is doing, and then is like, can the deal itself still return your capital if it like if things went south and they have to get out of it sooner than expected.
So how do you do that? So on a debt front, it is somewhat easier to do, although there's risk on everything. But if you're in a first lien lender secured by a solid collateral at a conservative loan-to-value ratio with a good quality borrower that you've underwritten, you have pretty good chances of returning your principal, right? I mean, back to exactly your point, return of principal first. So safety of principal. First lien debt is relatively, I don't want to call it easy, but it's much easier understood, much easier underwritten. Now, when you go into equity, things are a lot more complicated. And a lot of equity checks last a couple of years, it's not clear if the money's going to come back. And we do a sensitivity analysis on data, et cetera. But these analysis, quite often, these projections and assumptions, a lot of things change. And now it's kind of interesting because things adjusted quite a bit, valuations adjusted. So the new deals may look pretty attractive, but how do you do this in methodology? I'm just curious. How do you look at the safety of principal in an equity investment? I'm just curious of the thought process because it's hard. It's hard for me too. So when we go look at an equity deal, you sort of assess the downside risk and an upside risk, and you come up with, okay, if these things go wrong, you could lose your principal. And if these things go, semi-decent, then you got a decent scenario of at least return of capital. And so I'm just curious your thoughts. How do you do this exercise?
Well, it starts with the understanding and basis that you can always lose your principal. Like there's no way, no one can promise that the principal will not be lost. So it always starts with that because the individual has to be comfortable with, if I give this out, am I comfortable losing this? Which is why you shouldn't just be investing everything that you have, unless you just unless this is something that you feel 1,000% comfortable with. But at that point, you still shouldn't do it. So that's the base understanding there. And then, like, yes, you even though like past performance does predict future results, but you're still going off of how this person has operated in the past. Like, how have they may not be if it's successful. Like how do they do right by their LPs? How do they communicate and all that stuff as well? How are they underwriting these deals? Like, are they over sharpening their pencils to make these numbers work? Are they accounting for just adjustments to, hey, there may not be any rent increases that's going to be down the road, but there's still going to be increases in expenses, and what type of sensitivity tests are being done to assess that point of it there. So, and once again, how, like, where is the market? Like how much below market value is this property, is this asset that they're able to acquire, and all this money that they're going to do with this huge lift, so forth and so forth. Because you try to put those type of things into place. Okay, cool. Like, even with all the money that was put in for equity purpose, we're still way below what the actual assessed value of the property would be when it's completely fixed up. So we have to jump out of it early. There's still a possibility to at least all the LPs to get their at least get their capital back from there. And does the operator has a history of doing that? And what's their history of dealing with down markets? Like, are they just now new? There's been a lot of new operators that came into play. I would say probably since 2017, when the bone depreciation all came into play, and that became a huge dangling carrot for a lot of people using to raise capital. And now that's not such a benefit anymore because people became more educated on if they can use these losses. All right, now these operators can't promise the losses, and they're not generating profits on the deal itself. And so how like what so they may just be too new in the game to deal with how a down market is. And are you willing to stick it out if you're going to get equity? Are you willing to stick it out for the ride until potential upswing? And what's the operator's plan if it is a downturn? And does that make sense? So you're going through multiple things, and it's everything in life is easier to do when you have a partner with you along the way that can help and just give you a second look at it from a different perspective. So because you can just get caught up in your head, get analysis paralysis, and not pull a trigger on anything, which is not a bad idea if it doesn't make sense. But hey, we can start. People still making deals happen, and just kind of understand like what are they going through to actually make that deal work.
Yeah, that's very interesting, and a lot of great points. That the bull run has been long. You went back to 17. There's been a bull run since 2008 crisis. Anything you did over since 2008 until now, most of these things have done well. So it's kind of a. There are very few people today who have gone through 2008 crisis, and well, I mean they exist, but there are a lot of new people who've entered the market in between, and they've had a lot of successes. Kind of the tide rose all boats, or raised all boats. So I concur with you, and having I guess coaching services helps folks make these decisions. These are not easy decisions, and having another set of eyes and ears helps a lot. So I understood. What else you do? Just sort of we dived enough into tax planning a little bit. We talked about investment coaching. What else you do with folks? Just curious. Again, this is your floor. Anything you want to share? Any interesting ideas, suggestions, brilliant ideas? Kind of what do you want to share with the audience?
Yeah, I mean, at this point right now, where the market is and where we are, we're more if we're looking for like the bigger turnaround, like quicker turnarounds, we're into our new construction projects now. Where we are in Virginia, we know where the path progression is and where cities are really putting their money into and revitalizing schools. So we're basically always working with our private lenders and our equity partners on our new residential new builds. And also from a cash flow play, we're looking more into mortgage notes now. So something that we've been dabbling into for about a year. Bought a few, some have paid out fully, some we're still getting cash flow on. So we're building our cash flow from that angle and educating people on how that investment vehicle can work for them, whether it's a non-performing note or a performing note. More of a performing note it goes non-performing. So once again, you're trying to get all the different angles of it as well, but a lot less liability associated with stuff like that, less overhead costs. Still, like you mitigate the risk with those type of things, but yeah, just those are kind of our two focal points. Like we still have some rental properties that we're operating and some that we're starting to sell off at this point now, where the prices are and just better ways to deploy that equity elsewhere instead of where we currently have them. So that's our focal point on the investing side of things.
Yeah, I appreciate that commentary. It's actually a good time to be a lender. Honestly, some people have asked, hey, what do you think about equity versus debt in this environment? And I concur with you that being a lender, obviously as a lender, you typically don't have liability associated with equity ownership, but two, you also can get predictable, steady income if you bought the right type of performing instrument. You either originated it or you bought it. If it's well underwritten, relatively defensive. There's a risk in everything, but you can get pretty defensive. First lien loans, even sometimes secondary lien loans, we've done plenty of those, can be a very lucrative way to deploy capital, and you can get pretty good returns without taking equity-like risk. So from that perspective, I certainly share that thought. And then you said something about selling some appreciated assets. It's kind of interesting. Just any quick comments or thoughts? So residential real estates have done well. It's still it just regardless of the higher for longer rates, residential real estate just not taking anything on a chin. In fact, some of the markets continue to appreciate despite the higher rates because of very limited supply. What are your thoughts? Is that party over, or it's going to continue? Is it better to rebalance the portfolio a little bit because it's done so well over the years?
I think it's always an aspect of rebalancing on our end. And that's where the mortgage notes kind of come into play there. I mean, a lot of these properties that we're selling off now, they're kind of part of our original portfolio of items where like they've been doing well, but the return of equity like could be better. And just the where we initially thought the cities were going to progress at now it's not really moving in a sense there. Like, hey, we don't have to sell them. But if we sell them, like here's our price, we know what the market is, and we'll just see if anyone's willing to jump for it. And most likely it's going to be a 1031 buyer or someone, and these are real smaller multifamilies where you can do a house hack from there and get a residential loan there. So that's where we're kind of seeing from there. Where like it's the lack of inventory, where it's this weird state where in 08 it was more of a greed aspect that caused the crash, where like now it's like, hey, well, it's just people really can't afford, and it's stopping a lot of people from selling because of interest rates or kind of creeping up from there. So yeah, so that's where we're kind of seeing where like the residential going will somewhat stay steady because the inventory is so low. It's just, are the cities willing to allow developers to do more multifamily, or are they just going to find more ways to get more housing in their areas?
Yeah, it's a complex problem. These higher rates are making it very difficult to do new starts. So new starts, new construction of residential housing is really subdued. And same thing on multifamily. Any new starts kind of fall off the cliff with these higher interest rates. And it's kind of a I've said this in the past, and just curious your thoughts. So the Fed has been trying to fight inflation by virtue of hiking the rates. But when you hike rates, you make construction much more difficult to do. And when you don't bring new supply, no new construction, no new supply, you're making it more difficult for people to afford because you don't have new product. So it's a counterbalancing force as much as they're trying to get inflation under control. They're really hurting the new starts. Are you seeing interesting opportunities there, or at this point it's all so difficult and it's just better to be a lender and sit and wait and see what happens.
Well, to piggyback off you're saying with the private lending, it works on the residential side because if you're able to adhere to the Dodd-Frank regulations, we're seeing a lot more seller financing to homeowners from there. It's just like I say, it's just the compliance stuff, and most people who are trying to sell don't have that type of infrastructure or knowledge in place to make sure that they're not interfering with those regulations. But there's huge opportunities there where you can actually structure a mortgage someone, and depending on how much equity that you need to be pulling out from the property, you guys should get them cash flowing as an actual homeowner instead of renting out the property from there. So we're seeing a lot more of that being a viable option for those as well. And from the private lending side, on the borrower side, long term wise, it's actually cheaper to deal with the private lending instead of the equity partners, even though it may be less money that you're paying in the earlier part, but you're not having to deal with the equity aspect of it over an extended period of time. Whereas with private lenders, you know exactly what you're going to be paying, and you have an exact end date. Where there is no exact end date with the equity partners until you actually sell off the property. So there's opportunities in that arena for both sides of the borrower and the lender to be able to benefit from each other there.
Yeah, understood, and I appreciate that. So it sounds like you're doing some seller financing. Dodd-Frank, I guess, qualification is a critical requirement if you are selling a house and you're financing a house for an owner-occupied. And that's a, I've seen this product a few years ago, and today I guess it's gotten even harder. But you got to qualify them. If you otherwise you can't make the loan that's not Dodd-Frank compliant. Otherwise, you're gonna have problems later. So if you are considering buying a note on residential property owner rock. Most, by the way, most lenders in the space, hard money lenders, don't touch and don't do anything in the owner occupied. That is a unique space that kind of reserved for the agency money, kind of Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, HUD, VA, that are used to making these loans to folks who want to live in these properties versus hard money loans that typically design, and this is what we play in on fix and flip projects. You're making business purpose loan, short duration versus a long duration. So just any other final quick comments on this, and then how would folks get a hold of you? What's the best way to reach out?
No, I appreciate it. Yeah, I think just remember that, let's say, whether it's building passive income or saving on taxes, either way, all of it is a team sport. Like you have to have the right people around you. No one is doing this stuff by themselves, successful or not. Like even the ultra successful at this, like they have the right teams, and it is a lot of trust involved and vetting in place. So, but just building the right team around you, getting the right team or the right people around you, the right networks, goes a long way. You can reach me at www.larrypendletoncpa.com. You can looking forward to hearing from anyone that wants to learn more about me, about what we're doing. There's different podcasts that we've been on and webinars that we're having. We have another webinar coming up in a few days about investing out of retirement accounts. So there's just different ways that you can reach out to me. I'm on social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. So the normal three there. But yeah, that's how people can reach out to me.
Larry, thank you kindly for coming on a podcast. Thank you for sharing. Hopefully, folks will appreciate some of the wisdoms you shared. And we'll reach out at LarryPendletonCPA.com. That's the website and obviously related social media websites. Thank you kindly and have a wonderful day. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.